Well, Mike, I finally found someone on the net who is younger than me. You weren't alive in 1969, so I guess that makes you the next torchbearer when my generation passes the torch. I can tell that people talking about POTA and getting out and doing some remote operating, that's definitely a sign of spring coming up, and it's definitely a sign of people being done with being locked in the house all winter and wanting to get out and do stuff. So, good to hear. Okay, Tony, KE8SBZ, go ahead with your transmission, and Kevin, 89WWU, please stand by.
Oh my gosh, here we go. This is KE8SBZ. Tony, your local astronaut. I've been listening to crackling on the radio here. Sounds like some of those first missions to the moon, for sure. And I just found the advanced noise reduction on my VHF radio here, and it's working really great. So fun to be on the net tonight. And fun question there, Kevin. I have a comment for Pete. I must be older than Pete, because actually we had 6 moon landings, and we had a dozen people, a dozen astronauts that walked on the moon between 1969 and 1972. But we always remember the first one. It's sort of like remembering Chuck Yeager was the first one to break the sound barrier, and you don't remember anybody else. So with that, let me break a second. Okay, we could talk about that for a while, but let's go to Artemis. We'll learn a lot of things on Artemis. It'll be interesting to see what they come up with. One thing was that they tried to redesign that heat shield a little bit, and they made it less porous, and actually it's a self-sacrificing shield to protect them against that 5,000 degrees coming back into the atmosphere. And I don't know why the thing held up, but that's going to be interesting. But there's some other problems coming up, and one thing is when they started noticing that there are impact flashes, they were noticing all kinds of impact flashes on the moon. And if you think about it, I don't think the moon's going to be, we don't have the technology, we don't have everything figured out to sustain any time up there. We've got, first of all, we got all the radiation problems that they've got between the Van Allen belt and solar radiation and galactic rays and what have you. But then those rocks that keep hitting the moon, those space suits aren't made to withstand that. And so they're going to have to figure something out if they're going to go up there and stay very long, because sounds dangerous. I'm going to pass it back to Mission Control. This is KU at SBZ.
Yeah, boy, Tony, you've sure raised a lot of concerns that I had while watching the mission, especially when I saw the impact flashes. You don't really see that on the side of the moon facing the Earth, but when you're on the dark side and you've got pretty much no light, that kind of stuff definitely stands out. And apparently there was enough of them in a short enough time that would warrant concern for any kind of permanent setup out there, because when those things are coming in, if you saw those, they hit the moon, they hit it with such a velocity that it vaporizes what they're impacting into and creates a small crater. So if that gives you any idea of what kind of energy those things supply, that's gonna be a challenge they have to figure out. On the heat shield, I think the Apollo missions they learned with ablative heat shields are ones that self-sacrifice. And that seems like a real gamble, because I know the Apollo one started out something like 6 inches or 8 inches thick, and by the time they came through the atmosphere, there was about 2 inches left. And, that's when you really want to know that your engineers have all their calculations done, their decimal points, and their I's dotted and T's crossed. And Tony, I think you got a better face for radio than I do. I certainly don't have the accent you do, so I'm not sure where a couple of people mistaked us for the same person, but keep up whatever it is you're doing, Tony. Okay, Kevin, KD9WWU, go ahead with your transmission, and Joe, NHCN, stand by.